Start out with, let's do roll call so we know who's here. Tom, if you would start us. Sitting in for Tom. All right, already messed up.
Tom Sullivan, Franklin County. Television, Benton County.
Erin Petty, Franklin County.
Michelle Gerber, Benton Franklin Recovery Coalition.
Chad Michael, Kennewick Fire Department.
Cindy Saunders from Benton County.
BJ Olson, Franklin County.
I'm Cheyenne Palmas, I'm Benton County. I'm just an honorary member. I'm not really here.
She's the brains of the outfit, making it all. I'm Keith Johnson. I'm currently the county administrator of Franklin County, but I want to introduce Dwayne Davidson, who is our interim county administrator. I think most of you know that I'm going to be leaving Franklin County in a couple of weeks, but Dwayne is former elected auditor, or excuse me, treasurer for Benton County, as well as a state treasurer. He's elected to serve a term there. Great experience and background. And I hope you're welcome, Dwayne.
Nope.
John Roach, unaffiliated.
Hey, I'm Becky Gross, Franklin County.
The Lone Shop is Benton County.
Stuart Devine, Benton County.
I'm Ray from Franklin County, and John Roach is a.
And I do live in Franklin County.
Thank you. One note of business. Last time we had some confusion over voting versus non-voting members of the committee. Only voting members can bring motions and second motions. So if you are a non-voting member, just abstain from seconding any motions. We want to do the business appropriately. You received the meeting minutes from the previous meeting. If there's any changes or amendments that need to be brought to the minutes, any hearing none, I move we approve the minutes. All in favor say aye. Opposed? All right, the meeting minutes are approved. This is our opportunity for public comment. If anybody is wanting to address the committee, this is your time to do that. We'll also have another time later in the meeting. All right, no comment. Well, we have three items on the agenda for discussion, a presentation from Comprehensive Healthcare. Courtney's going to come and share with us a formation of work groups and the update on the RFP status. So, Courtney, thank you for joining us this afternoon, and you're up.
It's getting
there.
Slowly. There it is.
There we go. You're in the round.
There's a lot of, I do have one. It's in my office. Would you like me to go grab it? It's literally like right there. Okay. Eye contact.
Hey, my name is Courtney Kessler. I'm a chief quality officer with Comprehensive Healthcare. And last time there was some discussion about what does Comprehensive currently do in terms of crisis response? And so just taking the opportunity to go through that a little bit and provide some information on what we currently do, and then maybe speak a little bit to this idea of global outreach that maybe sits a little bit outside of crisis response as a layer, maybe even for crisis response. So what I want to get into with my first slide is just to tell you a little bit about Comprehensive Healthcare. We are a private nonprofit established about 50 years ago. Well, it is our 50th anniversary. And over the years, we've expanded to serving 11 different counties by treatment to over 20,000 individuals a year. We're very invested in evidence-based practices. We've many of them, especially to you, and we're joint commission accredited, so for and other medical folks, that's an accreditation we sought out. It wasn't a requirement for behavioral health, but we sought it out many years ago, just to hold us accountable to a higher level. So currently, what we provide in the Tri-Cities, specifically around crisis response. So we do have outpatient services, but this just speaks to crisis. We currently employ 11 different DCRs to respond 24/7 in the community. This outreach can occur in the community, in hospitals, jails, in the field, law enforcement, wherever it needs to happen, we will go there and do that. We also have an office currently in Pasco, as of tomorrow, in Kennewick. We do offer walk-ins, so people can just come into our location and see that as well. On top of the DCRs, we also employ what we call mental health assistants or crisis case managers to help support the work that the DCRs do. They interface with clients as well. We're also in the process of propping up a youth mobile outreach team for that. We'll have 6 staff dedicated to responding to any call or request for outreach involving the youth up to age 18. Again, that to go out in the community, wherever the crisis, where the situation is at, to help work with the youth and the family. They will be housed at our crisis location blocks down the road. Again, folks can walk in as well and see best.
Courtney, would you prefer a question? So what do you have? Is there a response time for the crisis?
The contract requires an hour.
Oh, okay.
I looked at what you guys have been considering for a mobile outreach team. And so this was kind of my summary of what I was seeing in terms of the need. So it looked like that the county was requesting several different teams, two-person teams specifically, to go outreach to request by first responders. So EMS, law enforcement, fire, these teams would get deployed either through potentially dispatch or directly from those departments. It also appeared that there would be a desire to have this team, whenever appropriate, respond prior to first responders, even going or responders go off. There was a desire to have both enough teams anyway to handle the geography and to be available 24/7. And again, to have a response time, ideally no more than 1 hour and operate 24/7. Staffing, one individual with at least a bachelor's level, and then another paraprofessional could be a peer counselor, for example. And then there was comment about potentially outfitting these units with radios and obviously these. This is just my 2 cents. I think it was called the mobile crisis response. If there's any other fancy name that could be thought of that pulls crisis out of that title, it might just be a little less confusing for the community, but that was just my thought throwing that in there. In the RFP, it looks like that because it's a team dedicated to first responders, at least that's how I interpreted it, this would be different from the current crisis team. Current crisis team responds to all calls anywhere all the time. So this sounds like we'd be a more dedicated team for first responders, again, either before or during or after they were on scene. And just a little side note, because we do offer crisis services with DCRs, a mobile outreach team could work very closely with these DCRs when needed. So if mobile outreach goes out, assesses a higher level of evaluation or care is needed, they could then contact the DCRs. So again, just a thought, if we currently have a crisis response, we're going to have a mobile outreach team. And then if the county also adds another mobile outreach team for first responders, three teams, which is great. But we just want to make sure we want to eliminate any confusion. It would be ideal if there was one number, one dispatch, call center, whatever you want to call it, that could kind of assess and screen and then deploy the right team so that we don't have to worry about the community going, okay, this is a 17-year-old, should I call the youth team and those sorts of things. And then of course you want a mobile outreach team that employs people who are well-trained in that quick assessment and screening to determine again what is needed, what level of care might be warranted, and being able to do that again helps with that response time. It helps to free up first responders so they don't have to stay on the scene as long. So additionally, if those mobile response team members have the ability to quickly access outpatient services, or at least appointments for outpatient services, that would be significantly important, because then someone can just get on the phone and secure appointment and manage that individual on the way.
Currently, with the model that you have in place, how do individuals, providers, and law enforcement access these services?
So they call the crisis line, or dispatch will call the crisis line and request the DCR out in the scene. And so that's how they access them now. Sometimes law enforcement will bring them by our office. We have that. So they'll have an individual that's willing to come with them. They'll take them to our office. So Sydney fielded some questions from you guys and compiled those for me. And so these bullets are kind of my responses to those questions. And I saw, I tried to also leave in answers to the earlier slides. But in general, DCR, we throw acronyms a lot, so I apologize. But it's a designated crisis responder, a master's level clinician who's had further training in crisis response and the Involuntary Treatment Act. In Washington state, the DCRs are the only ones that can initiate the Involuntary Treatment Act or ITA. You go to California, it's much different. You go to Massachusetts, it's much different. So every state has a different crisis response system. So in Washington, DCRs, when they evaluate, they decide someone qualifies for an ITA. They're the ones who complete all the legal paperwork. They're the ones that find the placement, the location for that individual to go to. So currently our contract for DCR services ensures that there is 24/7 response, regardless of anything. Age, funding, doesn't matter. We need to be available to evaluate. Oh gosh. So, DCR in terms of level of response is like the highest level of response. So my easiest analogy is the SWAT team. DCR is a SWAT team for mental health. You don't necessarily want to deploy the SWAT team for every call, but sometimes that's how it works depending on the community that you're in and the resources that are available. So the RFP puts this out that not every crisis call warrants the highest level of response. Doesn't always warrant law enforcement. So we do train DCRs to respond to all outreach requests, regardless of the level of urgency, what we're hearing on the other line, who's asking for it. We train them to go and try to be helpful. And if the person is not detainable, then we're trying to provide resources and recommendations to help that individual or the family out. What we run into is because the actual detention process takes so long, you'll get DCRs caught up doing detentions for several hours. And so again, even though I have 11 DCRs, they are stretched over a 24-hour period for, again, all the geography in Benton Franklin County, it doesn't take too many
extensions to kind of start bogging down response time. So you, again, similar to law enforcement, you can't step up to the worst case scenario because that's just not fiscally responsible. So you have to kind of find a happy medium. But again, having a youthful outreach team is going to help the rest of the DCRs with their response time. And then adding in another outreach team, if you were to do that, again, dedicated towards first responders, that's also going to pull some cases off the DCRs and assist with response time. We do provide follow-up. That was one of the questions. DCRs will identify people that might benefit from a call or contact the next day, and they'll queue those up for our case managers to follow up with. And our team is actually in the process of hiring a crisis peer support counselor to be part of the crisis team. There's a question around medical clearance, DCR's favorite thing. So the process of medical clearance is a requirement imposed upon us by the facilities that we're sending people to. So most of the facilities that we send individuals to for a detention require that the person has been medically cleared by a medical professional, because most of the facilities we send folks to are freestanding non-medical units. So there's a set of lab work and exams that the facilities request when we're looking to send somebody to that. So occasionally, this is one of the questions, occasionally, because we operate a few ENTs and we have that relationship, DCRs have been successful getting people directly from wherever that person is right to the facility, bypassing the ER. This usually happens when the person has been in like one of our residential programs or in jail, because maybe they've had a recent medical clearance. We know they've been in a safe, secure environment, and we can move them straight to the ENT, but that does not happen. There's a question around adding a prescriber to the mobile team, which is great, a great idea. And certainly if you guys wanted that to be part of the contract, someone would be, it'd be good for that person to figure out how to do that, even if it's by telehealth. And, you know, they can, we've got all kinds of equipment that we can bring out to help us. Community partner collaboration. There's some questions around how that's done and how that could be done. If this mobile unit is dispatched by first responders or their respective dispatch, then there's a presumption there. There's some level of screening that's happening. Dispatchers are great at, you know, screening to determine what is needed, what needs to be deployed. So with that screening, I feel like you could safely deploy this team pre anything else if dispatchers feel that that's appropriate. Then of course, you know, this team should and could respond to places like the Union Gospel Mission or wherever a call might kick out and come through dispatch, and that dispatch unit could say, this is more appropriate for a mobile team, not police. And so police don't even have to get involved. And then,
so that's going on now, or that's your intent?
The crisis team will come anywhere right now. There was a specific question around if there was a mobile outreach team, would it be responding to places like the Union Gospel Mission and then the future was in Pasco even and things like that. So, so again, if the idea is to have the mobile response unit be tied to EMS calls or pulling those away from EMS, then you could reasonably have that unit go to any place because there's been some level of screening for safety and no medical emergencies. But right now, the Union Gospel Mission in Colvin said, we need somebody here, then that's the crisis team, Again, it might not necessarily, you know, require that level of response, but that's the response level that we have.
So here's what I guess my point of view. So I understand that you have the 11 DCRs. Can the mobile crisis team themselves, without a DCR, respond to incidents?
So this is kind of my thoughts on what I saw on that draft RFP. So if this committee wanted to have that be part of the mobile outreach team, that you shall respond to calls in the community triggered by a 911 call and those sorts of things, then that team needs to be prepared and able to do that. Again, we don't need to send a SWAT team every time. So with appropriate training, anyone could go out and be helpful as a determinant and higher level of response is needed.
Well, from a law enforcement standpoint, I'm more bundling up a package, put it in a patrol car, taking it to one location. You all decide who's spawning and where it's going. Whatever happens to be, you all figure it out. They want to go, I'm going to detain you and I'm going to take you to the appropriate professional to deal with your problem. We're going to go away and we want to deliver someone to one location. And then however all these different teams respond, figure it out. But we need to get so everybody can activate teams or response and take the dispatcher out of there, take the cop out of there. Y'all figure it out there. That's what needs to be done. All these things, but it's not reality. That's not what occurs. What occurs is pushing and tossing that package all over the place. So, from a law standpoint, I want to go take you into therapy custody and I'm going to be building and going to get this for my custody and I'll get you. I'll take over out somewhere in Kennewick or somewhere in Pasco or only 8 to 5 years. Yeah, all of a sudden that work, it needs to be one location. People that have a background training. Record. We just want to get people. Be somehow. That's the frustration. Jobs. Have to start thinking outside of the box. One of them. At some fixed location.
I hear what you're saying, and that certainly would be the ideal in any community. I think we can currently we can get way there as far as if law enforcement were to take someone in protective custody, and we totally appreciate it when that happens, and brought that individual to our crisis building. It is 24/7. I've got staff there all the time. We could take that package today and then we can figure out what needs to happen today. As we've talked about before, unfortunately, then if the DCR says, gosh, this person really needs detoxification, then we've got a challenge. Or gosh, this person really needs this crisis bed, we've got a challenge. So I can totally receive those packages. And that's what I appreciate about what you guys are looking at is then creating resources for this package. So your analogy goes to, we do want to reduce again, any confusion or, you know, officers having to decide what number and who, what, when. And that's why we've consolidated as much as we can to one number that will be able to reach both the crisis team and the youth outreach team. My only thought with what you said is I think of process issues, and right now there's a significant process issue at the state level with transporting individuals. So If you brought me someone today to our crisis building, I said, yes, I need to detain this person, I then need to get that person somewhere. And that is where we're really challenged in this state, because the state said, well, the only people that can transport that person that's now detained is either law enforcement or EMS. And so, and I know you guys are challenged in doing transport. So if that facility, that receiving facility that you're talking about was a crisis stabilization unit and a detox or some other facility that could immediately take that person and start care, that would be absolutely the most ideal.
Come from your all about.
Yes.
You've got one behind you there.
Talking about two different issues here, the mobile outreach team or mobile response team is to reduce the number of packages that you have to wrap up and take somewhere. And so we're talking about the sequential intercept map. We're trying to intervene earlier so that you have less people that you're responding to. And then to your point, that's the second part of the conversation. What this team's trying to do is create that one-stop shop at a centralized location where somebody is dropped off at an ENT or stabilization facility. And then you guys could go back and do your thing, and then those people are responsible for that. But I think we're talking about kind of intermixing the two things we're talking about.
Well, they have, they have to be intermixed.
I agree. Yeah. I think they have to be intermixed, but I think the first step in what Courtney's talking about today is that earlier intercept point where they're trying to avoid a law enforcement response and stabilize somebody in the field so that you guys don't have to get involved. But they're responding instead of law enforcement.
So, Tim, how often does that happen?
Yeah, call the crisis response.
But.
Ask us to call them.
Courtney, I applaud you for what you're doing and this and the things that are happening, have potential to happen. I'm just going to give you a couple real scenarios that I've been involved with here recently. There was an individual at one of our outreach centers in Richmond that was suicidal. Crisis response was called to come, and I came to at least speak with this individual that was in there. Okay. There was a recovery residence here less than 30 days ago. There was an individual that was in mental health crisis. Called that place, I want to say roughly about 11:30 at night to crisis response. I got a phone call about 11:50 that night. Again, nobody was able to respond. Ultimately, they wound up calling dispatch. Dispatch called the responding police agency. The responding police agency came over there, had no other choice but to take the person into custody. Person's then being transported to the jail. Jailers were just there to be jailers that had to act as defunct mental health professionals. And the next day, the courts and everybody else has to get involved to try and figure out what we're going to do with this individual to get them the mental health services they need. I understand the potential's there. I could see the full picture that even if you guys go at times, where are you going to take them? How are you going to get them cleared? Where are you going to take them next? But the reality of this stuff happening here currently is.
Jason, I hope that when you or anyone else runs into a scenario where a request for an outreach occurred and no one responded, that you're calling Lori or myself, because those are things that we can manage in real time. There should never be "we're not coming" click. I get very angry when I hear that, and then I want to know when did that call happen and what time of day and all of those things. And because that's absolutely not how we train our staff. And so my mind goes to, was the right number called? Was there a technology issue? Like, what was going on? So in those moments, we really need folks to call a Lori or Bobby or myself so we can deal with it in real time. I've been out I've been on vacation and have handled calls half a week because I want to figure out what is, what's going on. So I think the big picture, from what I can tell in your guys' draft RFP, is you're looking for a unit to relieve first responders of those calls, if ever possible, prevent first responders from going if they don't need to. So I think that type of response is absolutely feasible. It can be easily woven into what we happen to also have going on. As long as that communication and collaboration is there. And again, the second piece is, and then what are the resources other than sending someone to a psychiatric hospital that we can access? And I mentioned last time, we have facilities that we can access in other communities we have them at, but here there's a challenge because they don't presently exist.
Courtney, I have a two-part question. The reality of needing somebody to be medically cleared, if, I shouldn't say if, when we create a one-stop place to bring crisis individuals to be assessed or whatnot, if that facility doesn't have a hospital connected to it that could do the medical clearance, would that person have to be transferred to a hospital and then back to them? Or how would you see that working? And the second question is, if there wasn't a adult inpatient bed available, what would happen to this person that's there at that facility waiting for something?
Well, I guess part of the good news is if you guys can come.
Sure.
So if you want, so just for example, our crisis stabilization / detox unit in Yakima has no medical clearance requirement. People come in, people are dropped off, we take them and we do, check their blood pressure. We do a basic medical screening. If they're outside our parameters, if they're, going 0.3 or something like that, then we take them to the emergency room to make sure that they're safe to be in. So that's an example of what you can do is, again, depending on how you license the facility, that dictates a lot of things, but if you license the facility in a particular way, you can say, okay, we're going to have some basic parameters so people don't die on our unit, but we're not going to require medical care. So that's completely to you guys developing that. If someone came to that facility and maybe was DCR came and evaluated and said, yes, the person is needing a higher level of care and needs to be detained, then that's when it sends it into medical clearance mode because we know that all those facilities are. Yeah. So if there's facility at that facility, there's a lab, if there's a lab or something like that at that facility, then potentially you could do the medical there. Otherwise, they would have to go to an emergency room to get that clearance. But the nice thing about having a crisis stabilization unit is you will find your detention rates go down. Because when you don't have an intermediate point, then sometimes a DCR is like, I could keep them safe over here in this place, but this place doesn't exist. So the only place I can keep them safe is in a higher level. So I think you would find that a lot of people who came to the facility that you're describing more often than not would stay and not. That was there was a question around the issue of homelessness. You have to be, my recommendation is to be really thoughtful about what you would want this team to do. If you extend them too far, you'll lose their ability to be responsive. You'll lose that 1 hour response time. So if the desire is to have a team available to do continued outreach and going back into the community and following up with people and making linking them to resources that absolutely could be done, and this team, staffing structure might look different, it might get bigger, just so that there's, again, enough staff to be able to respond to the other urgent calls within.
That's it.
But again, I'm just trying to respond to the questions I saw. Everyone?
We have one more question. We're talking about the training. What is that?
Further training? So DCRs in particular, there's a requirement to have a certain number of hours of training in certain areas like co-occurring disorders. So we provide that required training internally. There's also a DCR academy. It's not required in statute, but we typically send all of our DCRs to that. So again, that further training is just what's defined in the statute in terms of other education that the DCR is supposed to have.
Does the committee have any other questions?
Black requires all. Five. But. Current supervisor.
If we were to do the mobile outreach team as described in RP or as we would have. We're hiring a separate supervisor for the. Probably not by 22. So.
So the youth team that you have in place or you've been at? It's not in place yet, correct?
We're hiring.
Okay. So do you think that that's going to be whole thing? I'm just wondering, could be. How do you wait to see if you need it?
It might be a Cindy question, but our contract is for a specifically a youth team, all youth calls. And then, of course, our current crisis team responds to youth and adults now currently. But with the youth team, we'll have care coordinators, family partners, youth partners, and a supervisor. So I don't focus on adults. But the focus point for the youth team, again, is to intervene before or at the ER, if at all possible, or looking at detention, or if they do respond to a youth at an ER, they're trying to see if they can put in supports, kind of like a wraparound model, get in there and do things so that we don't have to. There's such a shortage of youth psychiatric beds in the state. Youth are waiting days and days and days to go to such a facility. And we're trying to eliminate that altogether.
Joelle just responded, the youth mobile crisis team is a very specific contract requirement in our contract from the healthcare authority that it only serves youth. Has to be very specific to you. So they would not be able to have an app with that team.
I was just thinking because of the workforce shortage, that if you don't have enough clients, you could do half a team than the other.
That makes the most sense, but it's very specific for youth only.
Brian, I have a question. What's your throughput right now? How often do you guys receive calls weekly? Hopefully, and do you feel overwhelmed? Are you understaffed?
We're not overstaffed currently with the crisis team. I just pulled some data yesterday. I'll see if I can remember because I have too many sites. Tri-City responded to 400 something calls face to face, but they receive thousands of calls in a month through the crisis line. But a lot of those can be managed by the crisis case managers and the mental health assistants on the phone. So right now we're in a good position as far as staffing.
How often do you have to deploy your crisis?
I think our response time last month or last month's calls was actually really good. I think, again, it could be in San Diego counties, but I want to say we're like 15 minutes.
I understand you correctly. You're concerned that we're creating a redundancy in the system by operating another mobile unit instead of basically doing what you're doing now.
I wouldn't say a redundancy. You're creating another layer, which is I'm supportive of layers.
So this is a different echelon of care. And then if we created that secondary echelon or primary, and you become the secondary left SWAT team, mm-hmm. then would you have facilities for the call center with the call civil advice plan? And then you guys made the determination on which echelon of care to deploy?
I think that's kind of up to this group.
Again, well, what's your recommendation?
How you want to access resources. I mean, I think when you're talking about a layered response system, the more you can consolidate it to one entity, the better. That's just for efficiency sake. Again, you have one number, you have one call center or dispatch, you have one set of rules and policies and procedures, you're training everybody the same. Ideally, you're under one roof, you can walk across the hallway and talk to the team, you know. So again, on paper, ideally, it's one entity managing the different layers. It's very similar to what Spokane is doing. They have several layers in their peak of crisis response, and it's all managed by one entity.
Do you currently have an infrastructure in place that can manage all of those response and care?
And if you're asking if we could manage this, yes.
So just, I guess one for Kim, what does the coordination look like right now? If you're dispatched, you receive a call, somebody is in mental health crisis, what does the coordination look like between your dispatchers and the local teams?
Currently, we would send law enforcement or fire in the circumstances of what's going on there. Job to emergency response. If the person called and they weren't having, they said they were
actually. So break that down into percentages. Take 10 calls, how many are going to hurt? How many?
Very few.
So it's fair to say that you put it in law enforcement's hands and they have to do it.
Law fire to bring it back.
They're in line problem.
Yeah, when we were a couple months ago, we were meeting with the Yakima fire. We were talking about creating a layer in their system and having us co-respond with fire. We already co-respond with law enforcement there. And so we had lots of conversations with dispatch about, I don't have the verbiage, but you know, those different codes, color cards and things like that to help kind of do that screening so that it wasn't just automatic deployment to fire police. It was what things are in place and can we just deploy this other team instead of. So yeah, they seem like they could get there, you know, building. Set
from this engagement, then each one of these groups seems to respond. I don't know, fires just like we can now with fire EMS and law, there's some chapters together to an extent, depending on
you're called in a 24-hour period.
Law enforcement specifically,
yeah, and the building.
No.
Oh, for
Yakima. Oh, for Yakima. How long can we get called by police? We have full responders. We have PCRs embedded with law enforcement, so that's pulled down our crisis calls directly to our crisis team. But I know with 1310, we started getting a huge number of calls from EMS and dispatch because law enforcement. move those calls at that time, so I could get numbers, but I don't know.
Didn't we used to have ECR rolling with law enforcement?
Yeah.
Oh, you get it? Okay, all right.
You should be able to learn from that.
Yeah.
Right.
And we'll re-implement it.
Well, it actually reasonably worked very well.
Yeah.
That, you were part of that, Bob's part of that. But at the end of the day, it was still the same problem, getting them somewhere in fixed location.
Well, that's why we're all here.
Well, and the other problem was, we, in many instances, we dealt with the crisis of the moment, but it was so hard to follow up and keep them from being another frequent flyer for you or us. That's the problem. You know, just for the committee, Pasco's not the busiest EMS agency in the Tri-Cities, but I looked at our third quarter responses the other day. I think all our medical calls for that third quarter was like 250, 300. They had almost 175 behavioral health calls. So the ratio is huge at what we're seeing. I mean, you would think that most of what we deal with is heart attacks and strokes, and then, you know, a third or more of what we deal with are behavioral health issues.
So if we, as Shelby said, add in this other layer, first layer before we get to the crisis level, is that a reimbursable service? So to be able to sustain itself and be scalable. I mean, are the health plans paying for that?
There's very little, well, there's a lot of discussion around that. So Medicaid covers crisis services. Your third-party payers don't often. There's not the parity that we see in medical services. Medicare, never. So there, that's the inherent challenge with behavioral health services in general, but crisis in particular. So Cindy's agency ensures that everyone in the community gets crisis response with the funding that they receive from the state. So that's dedicated dollars to say, we know we need it, and so go provide it. So we submit services, but the behavioral system is different from the medical system in that a lot of the contracts are not what we call fee-for-service. So you go to your doctor, they do a procedure, you get a nice big bill, you know, at the end of the month, because they charged a fee, your insurance paid this much, now you gotta pay this much. That's not, unfortunately, how behavioral health works. So we can certainly bill, we have the infrastructure to do all the billing for the services, but that reimbursement is gonna be a fraction of what we bill. So that's again, kind of why this, that's why we see True Blood, that's why we see the youth mobile outreach team built into contracts, because—
For grant funding.
Well, or just dedicated dollars out of state budget, because we know that, state knows that the resources needed, there's not funding to support it, so they put funding carve-outs in contracts to support it. So with what you guys are doing, you're saying, I want a dedicated team 24/7 to do these things for everybody. I don't care, you know, that I don't care what their payer is. I want you to go out and be helpful. Is how I read it.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, my experience is that, you know, no one really gets the care they need urgently unless they're detainable. And if they're not detainable and they don't meet that high level criteria, then they get lost back into the system and you end up seeing them again. So to me, if we had some sort of a, and it wouldn't be for everybody just because Betty doesn't feel like making an appointment. It would be more like, this person has had an interaction, you know, she's in an urgent crisis, we can't get her in for 2 or 3 days. Do we have a prescriber that can do some bridging to get them stable until we can get them into an appointment? Because to me, that seems like a huge need. And I just don't know if those services are reimbursable enough to sustain them.
I don't think they're reimbursed. The way the state is currently structured, it's just my opinion, I don't think any behavioral health service is reimbursable to a point of sustainability. It's a completely underfunded, unfunded system. And that's why we see the grants and contracts and the things that we see bolted on to try to hold the system together. But what you just described, again, could easily be built into this mobile, this other layer. So yes, there's a mobile outreach component, but maybe you have a care management component of that team. And those people follow up with the Bettys that, you know, on them into the ER, need to get hooked up to services.
So it sounds like we really need to look at our RFP and the scope and how we define this team and how preventive it is versus acute. Because my understanding was that this was to provide services before the first responders got involved. This isn't just, because we have that now. We have crisis response for first responders. We need to move that upstream a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that was the last, one of my last bullets in the slide was just based on what I read and when I saw the questions come through, I just wanted to say, make sure you're very clear what you want this team to do. It could be a hybrid of a lot of things. You just have to be careful of the stretch, because then you will lose that 1 hour response time. You'll start losing some things unless you're really specific. Like, we want mobile outreach to respond to calls from dispatch, you know, to before law enforcement to go do these things, you know, and do follow up. And so you can build that in there. And
I think we have some wiggle room on the response time that this isn't a crisis situation. And, you know, like you said, you know, do we really want to have a crisis in that?
Yeah, I think just for our community understanding, if you could pull crisis out of that title, that would just be helpful.
De-stigmatizes it.
Yeah, and just again, there, you can Google and find a gazillion different terms, like, you know, community outreach team, mobile assistance team, make up your own acronym. I would be very clear with the scope of work, and it's okay to have a couple different things. Like you said, the bridging for medication, why not? You know, see if you can build that in.
So the RFP, as I'm reading it here, I think Matt went back and revised it last month to say that comprehensive is currently the current DCR and mobile crisis response team, and you guys contracted through the GCBH. The selected contractor will be expected to coordinate for necessary DCR services and support MCRT services with whatever entity is contracted to provide those services. So it sounds like basically it's not taking anything away or trying to step on anything, any toes from comprehensive, but it's that this whoever contracts for this. For this facility is going to work with them on how to create what they need, those layers. So it's not necessarily, like Shelby mentioned, that, you know, it's not creating another team. It's working with the, you know, the DCRs and mobile crisis teams to facilitate what together. So.
All right. Any other important questions? We have other business to get to, so 15-second comment. All right, I'm timing you.
Here, a law enforcement emergency 988. So we'll see how that plays out. I know they're just starting to promote that, but that's the rule of 988 symptoms, so that when you have a day relative emergency, they call crisis. That's one of the three.
Excellent. Thank you. Courtney, thank you for coming and sharing. You've been in the hot seat for, you did an awesome job. Thank you. All right. So the next order of business is creation and formation of work groups. We sent out a recommendation to the committee that we would create four separate work groups. And then earlier today, I sent out a draft motion. I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at that. I think probably the easiest way to do this is for me to read through the draft draft motion, and if somebody would, I would entertain a motion that we adopt that. But I'll go ahead and read it first. I move that we create four work groups. The first group is standard for substance abuse disorders services work group, and this group would be responsible for the advising the committee on needs, expectations, standards, timelines, and et cetera for substance abuse programs. And this group would help develop the standards and expectations to include in contracts for the counties and SUD services. This group may also help with the monitoring and oversight of those contractors. Second group would be standards for mental health services work group. This group would be responsible for advising the committee on needs, expectations, standards, timelines for mental health programs. This group would also develop the standards and expectations to include in contracts for the county to issue for mental health services. And this group may also help with monitoring and oversight of those contractors. The third group would be a communications work group. And that group would be responsible for advising the committee on communication plan for the community about behavioral health services. This group could craft messages for the counties to put out regarding what the group and the counties are working on, as well as services that are available in the community. This group may also serve as a point of contact for questions to the community and input from providers and stakeholders. And then the last group would be a behavioral health workforce development group. And this group would be responsible for engaging with providers, educational institutions, employment agencies, local schools, and to find ways that we can bolster the number of qualified behavioral health workers in our community. And now you know why I sent it out before.
So I agree with the first three, but the workforce, behavioral health workforce, I know that there's a statewide group that's right now. It's just, I don't know if it's already finalized or they're still ongoing, but maybe partnering up with them instead of doing the workforce or redundancy.
Are they specifically with the behavioral health?
My girl just volunteered, didn't know.
I know that work group is also going on. I think one of the challenges would be that finding when they meet and getting on that group, they selected certain individuals from each representative agencies to be on it. And then that wouldn't be looking specifically at Benton and Franklin. If that's what you're wanting, if the goal is to look really at our own workforce and our own community, that probably wouldn't be helpful. But if anyone could get on that work group, that would be beneficial, what Joelle was talking about. The healthcare authority.
It's CA and
It's probably more robust than what this, my opinion is it would be more robust than what this committee would be interested in. Sorry, John.
It's fine. I know that they're working with a local community colleges and universities to try to get the behavioral health programs back up and go.
Yeah.
Anybody willing to move that we adopt that?
I make a motion that we adopt.
Second. It's been moved and second. Any discussion?
Going to come up with a proposal of what we want to see on the recovery center surrounding those two issues specifically.
Just recovery center or the response issue that we're talking about as well?
I would say that that would potentially be under the purview of that group as well, response times. Yeah.
Do Are you just taking emails on who wants to be on what group?
Actually, we have some people that have already emailed. After we approve this, then we'll go through and staff it today, hopefully. Keep it moving. Any other discussion?
Call for the vote.
Call for the vote. We have a second. All right. Any opposed? Vote by unanimous consent. Okay. So do you want me to reread it? I can. Okay. Called for the voting on creating the four work group standards for substance abuse disorders group, standards for mental health services group, communications group, and behavioral health workforce group. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. So looking at each of these groups then, we have to staff them. And I've had several people already indicate, and I got to get to my notes here, that they're interested. Let's see. I had it earlier. Let's see. This is it. No, that's not it. Yeah. Actually, while I'm trying to find that, Keith, if you would talk about the RFP. Great.
Yeah, the RFP, I think most of you have seen it. Matt Rasmussen sent that out for review, got some comments back. Timing of that, it looks like we'll probably get that out here in the next couple of weeks with the mid-December timeframe for getting it returned. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, I would encourage you to do that and add comments back to either Matt or myself and incorporate those into wording. Appreciate all those that have already provided some editorial input. I think most of those comments that came back have been included or at least considered. Everybody submitted something that was rejected, so it's all good so far. Yeah, just time-wise, we're probably looking at mid-December to have that back. At least the Benton County Commissioners have approved going forward with it. It is under legal review right now. So I would encourage you, if you have comments, get those in quickly so we can have the attorneys consider that as well. But most of the language that's come back has not been legal in nature. It's just been clarification and some changing of the text to take out the term crisis from the title of the facility. Michelle?
If the responses come back mid-December, when would a decision
be? Process-wise, I think it'll come back before the committee at the next available meeting to consider, and then contract itself would be awarded by the two groups of county commissioners. This group would make it a recommendation to the boards of commissioners to approve the contract.
I just hope that it goes quickly because we have people dying.
Yeah. Argument for me on that.
I had a question. As far as the SDD services, it's only going to be level three with the inpatient services. Yeah, we're not going to have any external level one or two outpatient. That's about it.
I think that sounds right to me. There may be somebody that's more technically qualified to respond to that.
That was my understanding, is that they, because we have a good a group of outpatient providers already that would be mostly for inpatient treatment, but there would be a space in there for outpatient providers to provide continuum care. If an individual's an inpatient treatment, they want to follow up with outpatient, the outpatient provider would be there to be the individual who took them up.
I think the bill of goods we sold to the people that are paying the bill is they have secure bed space, unsecure bed space, and all the wraparound treatments.
Well, in here is 3.5 and 3.7, so the residential level.
Yeah.
But.
Do you have any information on an A&E contract or construction renovation fund?
I do not. Matt may have that.
No, there's positive shows. Whoever the contractor was at all, but we got it. Work
comes and work with them, and they're maybe used in other places. So that doesn't require another whole RFP cycle.
I believe it will.
It will.
Yeah. Contract with architecture and design. Yeah.
So the provider, if they have one in place already that they produced.
Oh, I don't know. I put that up on the. Keith and Matt.
Yeah, that would probably go to the county public works group to administer that RFP, but that would probably require that.
Just for this group, we're on the topic of building. If you walk out the front door of the KDH building across the street, all those medical fellows, and they're not part of the KDH. During the same process for outpatient people having to do buying up the property around them, okay, the other thing are being decided on this person. We should be looking at those properties and how that would. Or now, get around some.
I'm just concerned. I agree, Tim. I agree. I'm just concerned that whatever the buildings are, can we not have another full cycle? And because we're already years into this process.
So I know the building. If you're standing in the front of the hospital, the front door is the building. It's a big L shape, but the right hand corner is already good for me. That's what it is. And I don't, Keith, would it make sense to incorporate into the RFP if the provider already has any company that they worked with that they could continue to? Just to kind of streamline that, but we have to go through that whole RFP process again.
Yeah, I'm going to have to probably defer a response to that if I've had a chance to speak with Matt. It certainly may be possible to do that. But off the top of my head, I don't want to commit to it.
We'd have to research procurement laws on what the county as a government agency can and cannot do in terms of procurement, because there are some pretty specific rules that we have to follow, and some of them are more lenient than others on when we can do things like that, where we have contracts that maybe we can do that with, where other contracts, because it's related to building a facility, it might be a bit more stringent than another type of contract would be, but we'd have to look at it. It'd be something our procurement team could definitely look into, sure.
So one of the things is that as we look at this process, this is the initial process to start a conversation with a potential bidder for the contract and what they would be looking for. There's still a lot of legal requirements that are in place. I mean, like licensing beds, for example, is going to take a while. And so this process is not going to be starting, unfortunately. It's going to take a while to get all our ducks in a row. So I understand the urgency. I think in the meantime, accessing our quality crisis services that we have now, and if there's problems working with them, is what we'll have to do in the meantime. But this is just the beginning. This isn't like a 3 months and we fixed the problem type of situation. It's this 2-3 year process it's going to take. So anyway.
Problem now.
Correct.
On that structure, there's a building that's been type of setting. Start building that. Don't have to ask permission from the state or anybody else to do that because taxpayers of the county utilize by your army. Same with you can paint the walls for beds and those types of keep movement and dream. Well, this is what we want it to be. And so you start down this process instead of talking about all the barriers that are being put up where you can't. It's time for us to get going and it's taking it a piece at a time. Like I say, the example is social detox building. Then let's get started on it. Keep moving. And if it's, you know, juvenile bed space or, you know, substance abuse, let's identify where that's in the building, what it looks like, and let's get moving. Why are you arguing about RFPs or which team is going to respond or all those type of things? And it's this group that gets to say, no, commissioners, want to get moving, want to get this done, want to get this done. Figure out all the legal pieces of that. I mean, this group says, commissioners, this is what we want you to do. I suspect that they get enough push, they'll do it. So why don't we start talking about that? Why we're talking about all this? Because it is important. But let's talk about what it is we want to do with what we purchased. Where we want to see that degree. If it's just simple things first, like turn the water on, mow the grass, paint the building, identify where social detox is going to be and start the process on that, we should be doing that.
We get calls all the time, really, from community groups that want to either buy things for the building or help physically. Walls, they're willing to do things. There's how soon can we start? I just think we have to find a way to have a modular phase in start because we spark the community. Now they want to help. The longer we don't let them, their enthusiasm goes down.
And I think the timing on the implementation should be a part of the RFP. I can't remember if it's in there. Like how quick can they implement?
Maybe 2025. Well, to license residential inpatient beds, the credentialing licensing process is painstaking and excruciating. And the whoever went word of the contract is the one that's going to end up dealing with that. So the sooner we get them on board, they can start that process, staffing up and getting all the everything they need and their ducks in a line and or in a row, starting that process. And you know they'll be able to start the you know the construction and remodel process at the same time. So it's just this right here, getting this out and getting. Proposals back to us is just wait for that, and then that once that piece is going, I think start happening, but it's going to be slow.
Another comment that I have is I so am in line with you, Sheriff, on that you know, first responders aren't in the minimal business of expertise. The fact is, everybody's saying that you most times, it sounds like 80% are that first person that is face to face with someone in a crisis. So, in the meantime, isn't there some education, some training until we can get this up and going, and it's a much better world for you, for the first responders in, you know, crisis change-related interventions, or, you know, mental health first aid or something to assist you, give you more tools for your toolbox when you guys are the first ones faced with
Well, fine group, yeah. We can build stopgap measures until we get to where we want to be.
Well, you know, maybe there's time for that.
But it takes government, people, mm-hmm. all the government sitting around the table here to think outside the box and what you do. Standing up and hope you don't have 10. 4x4 cells inside the Franklin County Jail housing mentally ill people.
Right.
Something stopgap type of measure so they can do that. Yeah. I think it just gets everybody has to come out of their comfort in order to make it happen. Everybody needs to lay their dreams on the table, what it is that they want to see. I know what Michelle's dreams are. I happen to be in line with her dreams too. But somewhere you gotta start, and you gotta say, okay, let's give a little just for now, try this to try to alleviate some of the pressures, which really, you know, I don't know. I'm assuming most of the board know that we lost the board member. Somewhere to try to help those types of things from reoccurring. We have to slow the flow of mentally ill people coming in there. No, just because there's nowhere. Not about someone coming to talk. But what do we do short term? I don't know. What can look those things? I know we have bed space in the Tri-Cities. I know that we have hospital groups that can't fulfill those bed spaces. I don't know. I think it's time for our medical groups, state groups to drop down their guard and let's figure out how to fix at least patch the problem we have right now to get to the ultimate goal, which is that fully functional recovery center. All of these issues being addressed in some form or fashion. Get there, and I believe we can get there faster. I have to go to the state for this one. I just know about watching the money coming in right now for this project, and it's substantial.
Yes.
Okay. It's $3.5 million for Franklin County alone in a 3 month period.
I think that is certainly one thing that is different now than in the past is that we do have funding for this. And so absolutely. So looking at the groups, the mental health group, we had two people that were interested. Angie, are you here? Huh? Androla, thank you. Mantarola. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
And Aaron Petty. We'd like to have at least four people in the mental health group.
How deep? Yeah. Can I ask a question about groups before we get it?
Yes.
So, you know, Jim, I'm certainly willing to think out of the box, as you know, and improvise and get things done. But I think my problem is I don't know what we need to do. Do we need a facilities group or somebody, some way to identify and talk, bring that to the group? So here's the opportunity here. Here's the opportunity there. We can bite off 25% of this opportunity and get something started. Because I don't even know what, I don't know. I want to ask about groups if that was.
Yeah, You know, I think we need to look at what we own. I use the social detox because I know that. Someone needs to explore that.
But I don't even know what we own.
So if you go over to the KGHO, Kenwood General Hospital, fence around it, and everywhere the grass is dead. And start to fade and fill. That's what we own.
Okay, so that's the hardware.
Possibility of owning more.
That's the hardware we own right now.
Yeah, and that includes a 350-bed hospital with the equipment type of things, cafeteria. I get you gotta have all the mice. But to do that, some sort of a, and these are one, some sort of soft opening project, start moving while everybody's arguing who's in charge of what. We go, there, you're in charge, it's done. And like she said, there are people that want to get involved, want to come, want to throw the paint out and all those type of things. Frankly, and these are my terms, government's getting in the way.
Yeah.
Well, I think in making one thing on, and it's my understanding the one-tenth dollars AMU's written. And so each one of the grants that we received for this have a $2 million grant for SED services, secure withdrawal man, that money has to be spent on that unit. So I agree. I think everybody in this room yesterday. So I think having a better understanding of what we can do with funding and with the specific purposes of it, because we can't just, I mean, we have a lot of money, but we can't just all throw it in a pot and slap some paint on the walls and open it up. These facilities, they have specific regulations that the state mandates that do it right. You don't get to open the facility. And I think, was it Clark County that had an issue with their crisis triage center, crisis availability? And they didn't follow all the, they didn't throw all the steps, and it sat unusable. But I think maybe that's part of the confusion, is not knowing what we can do, what sets of money, and that might be something that.
I agree with you. And that is, you're talking about, they built.
Having a better, and I don't have an understanding of that. I think having, if the group had a better understanding, we could have a 25 seems pretty far out there. And I think Matt put that data on there, but I think that was kind of a worst case scenario. And I intend us to obviously do this sooner, but it also need to be methodical.
Yeah, I like your idea, Bob, about having a subgroup like finance and facilities.
Yeah.
You know, that pulls together all that, then keeps reporting back here. And my other thought is I would love to set up a tour or something for all of us so that we could kind of see what it looks like. Been in there a million times, but I want to see what it looks like now.
Keith, so why can't it be used for brick and mortar, the 1/10?
I guess it's the way.
I think that's the way the RCW is written.
Standard.
It can only be used for services.
Operational.
It can be operations too. Yeah, just keep using constructive.
Construct or remodel?
Either. Capital.
Capital. Okay, well, depends on how it's written.
There's ways around it.
Yeah, all right.
I'll find it.
I think it's, I don't know.
Hasn't even closed yet.
It's not closed.
So Benton County doesn't even have the keys yet. So I think we own it in theory right now, but I think it was supposed to, I don't know, Keith, do you recall, it was supposed to be like almost this week or next week?
Yeah.
The 25th, I think, was last date, October 25th, I think was last date.
Yeah, so I know, so we can't even walk through the facility yet. I think that's probably a good idea, that's something to set up. Maybe schedule a meeting and go to her and see what kind of condition it's in.
Yep. All right, mental health group. Anybody else interested in serving on that? Kyle?
I have Angie Mantrola, Aaron Petty, Ryan Washburn, Kyle Sullivan, and Bob Gear, and Cindy.
Okay, we can only have five voting members, is that, are we still good? Okay. All right.
You could have members on there as our.
Correct, correct, yes. Do you want to do this in one big block, vote for everybody, or do each group separately? Do a block. Yeah, let's do one big block. Okay, substance use group. Keep your hands up, there we go.
See my memory on people's names here. Hands over here, I'm missing. So I have for Standards for Substance Use Disorder Services, Becky Groves, Jason Bliss, Joel Chavez, Kim Letrick, and Sheriff Raymond. Is there anyone else?
For the communications group, Michelle Gerber has said that she wants to. Anyone else?
Joe Roach.
The other.
And it sounds like Carla's on the line. Carla, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you, Cheyenne. I was just trying to find my unmute while I'm driving, so.
Carla missed out, so she's on every.
Wait, I'm communicating.
Did you want to be on any of the committees we've referenced so far, the mental health services, substance use disorder services, or communications? Carla?
Cheyenne, did you hear my response about communication?
Did not, thank you.
Okay.
And then workforce development group.
Have you had two committees?
Sure.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
So for communications work group, I have Michelle Gerber, John Roach, Carla Prock. For behavioral health workforce development, John Roach, Kyle Sullivan, Shelby Beardsley, and BJ Olson. Am I missing anybody?
Yeah, Kyle.
Yes.
Entertain a motion to adopt these individuals for the work groups.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Those in favor of appointing these to these work groups, say aye. Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Another opportunity for public comment at this time. If anybody who is visiting us would like to ask any questions of the group or share any comments.
Vice Chair Sutton, our chief of the county. About the licensing of the facility. That's the Washington State Department. State level of the.
Department of Health.
Missing an opportunity that number three out of our governor's priority. And even our senator out of Ritzville, Martin Schessler, mentioned, you know, that's on their priority list as, you know, officials, you know, as dealing with mental health and homelessness, you know, dealing with.
in. And so we're missing an opportunity to reach out to them to maybe that this process doesn't need to be that long and painstaking through a licensing process.
So when we first heard via hospital, we did contact Department of Health, and John, is it Steve Covington? Steve Covington from Department of Health came and said that it it usually is a long process, but because it's a hospital that's certified, that he didn't see that it would take as long for this facility to be certified. There just needed to be some modifications, especially for the management facility.
I think the problem that comes in with that is property.
So you're thinking of a Deepak facility being at the warehouse?
I think that's what this group will obviously recommend, but I thought you're talking about one stop on board. We're to have certain emergency services under that one. Service like residential location. That kind of has to happen. In my eyes, and again, Randy talked about our wish list and our emergent drop off services, but that's just in my mind. I don't know.
But you wouldn't, we're not planning to put them in an old hospital then?
The crisis stabilization restriction that creates problems. That was the whole crux of the issues.
I know, but it's for substance use. Which is
out. Yeah, and again,
yeah.
I don't want to drag on this. I think there are. I think that's maybe one thing that this group needs to work and work groups can identify as what services are we going to have at the Trails facility, and what services at other properties can't have, can't keep those.
Isn't that only if they don't have substance use disorder concurrently?
Yes. If it's concurring, it's
a concurrent. If they have both, they can stay there longer than 3 days.
Yeah.
Wow. Get them.
I don't think so.
That. I think that we probably should get some clarification on that.
Yes.
Well, I know that the services that we're talking about are crisis. Most people
sure.
Captain.
Oh, that's not what I understood. Is this written somewhere? Okay. Maybe we could see that.
Back to Bob's idea, which is
Sure. After we finish public comment, we'll do that in other business. Any other public comments? All right. Other business. Somebody want to propose a motion that we create another work group?
Not voting, so I don't think I can.
Nope, you can't.
So Michelle, what are your?
Well, I guess just to what Jim was talking about, I don't know as a member where we're at in some of these things. Where are opportunities to get started on stuff? And I think somebody needs to identify where we're at on facilities and what opportunities are there, and finances, because this is the first I heard the brick and mortar restriction on the 1/10. I didn't know that that was in place. So what are the other funding opportunities that we're going to pursue for brick and mortar work, or where it's going to go, and can work with this, can advise this group, just have some sub SMEs on those items.
I'll move for a new work group for financing facilities.
I volunteer with you all.
Okay, yeah.
All right. Suggest maybe Dwayne serve on that, their non-voting member.
We just need to get something done.
I will second that.
You want to say the motion?
That's what I said.
I thought you could make a motion for a finance and facilities work.
Yeah.
Want to read it back?
Rebecca Groves moved to create an additional work group for finance and facilities to identify opportunities and finances that are in place for current facilities, and Jason will second. For members, I have Matt Rasmussen, Dwayne Davidson, Jim Raymond, and Bob Gere.
Any discussion?
All for the vote.
There's been a call for the vote. Is there a second?
Second.
Those in favor of calling for the vote, say aye. Opposed? All right, so one more time, we're going to read this motion.
Michelle, would you like to be part of that group? So we had a motion to create an additional work group for finance and facilities to identify opportunities and finances currently in place for facilities and future opportunities. Jason Bliss seconded that motion carried.
So those in favor of that, say aye. Opposed? One thing with that. Requirements for facility. I think that would be helpful for the group to answer, whether at the state level or not, because I think there are some definite standards there that we have to meet if we're putting together a facility that has beds. I mean, that's a key piece. And it's not an easy process. Having worked at a hospital before, it's not something that I just put together in a couple months. So anyway, any other business? Take a moment. Along those lines, if you're responding to old emails, can you make sure that Mr. Hummel is not on those? His mother is still getting emails from us, and it's kind of hard on her to do that. So just be conscientious of that. Updated list, yes. Correct. Yeah, that would be good. Any other business?
I just have a question. Are we going to plan to each work group report out every month, or?
There'll be a standing opportunity to report out, yes. And so I encourage the work groups to get together and set a time that they can meet between. And I would say that for the mental health group and the substance abuse group, I think one of the first things I would encourage you to do is like, what are the needs and requirements for crisis services? And so if you could report back to the work group on that. The communications group, I don't know that we have a whole lot to communicate yet, but if you want to work on getting that together as well. And then on the workforce development, I think this is probably, honestly, I think this is probably the weak link in the chain in our community. That's my opinion as the chair, but I mean, actually it's not as a chair, it's just my personal opinion in the workforce is going to be a substantial issue in being able to pull this off. And so I realize workforce development is not fancy or exciting, but it is needed for our community. So, you know. All right. So we are adjourned. Overtime. Sorry. I tried.
Yeah, it's not this stretch right here. Do you think it's going to take 3 minutes? It takes about 8. This is not.
Yes.
I might have been seated on one. I'll have to take you back.
No, I'm BJ.
Oh, you're BJ. Okay, good. Yeah, good to meet you. Yes.
I think Dan is going to do. You know, Dan, listen. Okay. He's.